Good evening and welcome to South Sudan in Focus on the Voice of America. I'm Ayen Deng Bior in Washington. Here are some of the stories we're covering today, Wednesday, December 4th, 2019. A South Sudanese youth gets detained in Kenya.
I have not had any shelter since the flood started. And now that I have gotten, and when I get like this, I will be able to make a tent to help me.
And NGO workers in South Sudan are accused of sexually abusing girls.
I'm not happy to hear that people who are working under NGOs, they abuse our girls or our daughters.
We'll have these stories and more coming up on South Sudan in Focus. A South Sudanese youth who was arrested and briefly detained by immigration officials at Kenya's Jomo Kenyatta International Airport on Monday night says he suspects the South Sudan government was behind his ordeal. The youth, who is the Africa representative of the Red Card Movement, says he feels the Kiir administration wants to silence all Red Card Movement members who are critical of the government. Winnie Torino reports for VOA from Juba.
Garang Poljol says he traveled to Uganda 4 days ago to meet with other Red Card Movement members living in Kampala. He was arrested and detained while returning to Kenya. He says when he walked up to have his passport stamped at the immigration desk, the officer directed him to one of the immigration rooms to meet with the officer's boss since Poljol had a residence extension visa from Nyayo House. Poljol says he was surprised how the immigration official treated him.
He checked my name and checked my visa.
But when he saw my name in the biodata in my passport, he confirmed my name and took a picture of my biodata and sent it on WhatsApp. Unfortunately, after seeing the validation of my passport, the boss chose to chase me out of his office and yelling at me that I should leave Kenya and go to South Sudan. And it was at 10 p.m. that I could not even find any travel agency office that could be open that night. So I was so frustrated that I didn't know what to do.
So I was shocked.
Even though he was rattled by the encounter, Poljol says he calmly stepped out of the office for a few minutes and then returned. He says shortly thereafter, the official called in police officers who arrested him, confiscated his belongings and detained him in a dark room where he waited to be deported the next day. Poljol says he contacted his lawyer and family members who arrived almost immediately, but authorities did not allow them to meet with Poljol. He says they met with the immigration boss early the next morning when his lawyer was informed that Poljol is on South Sudan government's blacklist.
They told my lawyer that
my passport has been blacklisted by the government of South Sudan and that they were requested to deport me to Juba. From there, my lawyer insisted and said that he will need a clear information on why my passport was blacklisted and that I should not be deported because I hold a refugee status in Kenya.
Later, Poljol says he was transferred to immigration headquarters for more questioning but was found to be innocent and set free. He says he suspects the South Sudan government had a hand in his detention because Juba wants to stop the Red Card movement in its tracks.
I can stress the fact that the government of South Sudan is afraid of the Red Card movement and the fact that the government has never settled the issue of the Red Card movement and has always been trying to silence the voice of youths. So I think this was another trick or something planned, knowing that I am part of the leadership fraternity.
Last year, the Red Card Movement, which is a nascent South Sudanese youth movement open to anyone who embraces non-violence, planned to organize protests against the Kiir administration in Juba and other locations around the world on May 16th. The protest never took place in the South Sudanese capital. Poljol says the RCM is determined to raise the voices of the voiceless and expose the rights abuses that occur in the country. He is calling on the international community to intervene and stop regional countries from interfering in South Sudan's politics, saying it is causing more destruction to the nation. John Pengong, a South Sudanese activist based in Nairobi, says Garang's arrest is a violation of his rights given that he is a registered refugee in Kenya.
It's really very troubling to us to see that the governments which are actually supposed to host and protect us, conniving with the government that is after these people and possibly arresting and deporting them back home. This is a great message of despair to the refugees around the region. And I hope by this time the government of Kenya, being part of IGAD countries, should actually respect the international laws, the regional laws governing refugee rights.
A letter signed by the Chief Magistrate Makadara Law Court in Kenya and seen by South Sudan in Focus shows that Garang Pooja was issued a travel restriction on September 24, 2018. That order was vacated on October 24, 2018. For VOA News, I am Winnie Serino in Juba.
Women and child rights activists in Yei County of Yei River State are calling on the government to take tougher action against men who sexually abuse girls and women. A women's rights defender working at a mother's union in Yei says her office has recorded rising cases of sexual abuse against girls committed by NGO employees. Daniel Friday Martin has this report for VOA from Yei.
Activists and victims of sexual abuse say, despite their efforts to track down suspected rapists and have them arrested, the men are often set free without being tried in courts of law. Mary Boka, a women's rights defender working at Yei's Mother's Union, says her office is keenly following a court case involving an aid worker accused of raping a 13-year-old girl in Yei town.
I'm not happy to hear that people who are working under NGOs, they abuse our girls or our daughters, especially a child who is under 18 years. I'm not happy. I'm speaking out of anger because this is too much now. I can hear a girl of 13, 14 years, even 12, being raped by a mature man. I would like to say that anybody who is caught abusing these young girls, let the law take its course. They should be punished according to the law. Where is the law of this nation?
Mary Soroka says her 13-year-old daughter was raped by an NGO worker in August. Soroka says she attended legal proceedings against the suspected rapist at Yei High Court 6 times so far, but the case has yet to be resolved. Speaking in Arabic, Soake says the perpetrator was bailed out from police detention even though the case against him is unresolved.
The rape issue was real and that was why I took it to the court for justice. But I have seen the perpetrator is moving freely and also working. I want the court to take this issue serious because my daughter is underage, but the perpetrator denied his action against my daughter. We all took vow that the rape case was true in the presence of the judge and other people. I am not happy and need to see justice on this case.
Soake says she has no money to hire a lawyer to fight her daughter's case. She's appealing to human rights advocates to intervene. Alex Soro is the director for child protection in the State Ministry of Gender and Social Development. Soro says his ministry will ensure that the suspected rapist in Soaka's case is put on trial.
Previously, we were blaming soldiers, but there is no soldier who is working in the NGO. I don't expect an NGO staff to play sex with a 13-year-old girl. Who is defending these perpetrators? Is it the lawyer? If the lawyer is defending the perpetrator, then the ministry can borrow other lawyers too. Then the lawyer will face a lawyer. Other countries are becoming better because some countries have given 7 years imprisonment to a perpetrator. And even if the perpetrator is a millionaire, nobody will need his million. He must stay for those 7 years in the prison.
Yei River State High Court Judge Mangisto Amosa Wajir, who declined to have his voice recorded, says the court is investigating the case of Soaka's daughter and will announce a verdict soon, possibly this month. Yei County women rights activist Hawa Adams is appealing to lawmakers to enact a clear child protection law to reduce cases of sexual abuse against girls.
I'm really so much disappointed when I see young girls being impregnated by men who are supposed to take care of them. I'm calling upon the hands of the parliamentarians. I'm calling upon the Ministry of Gender, Child and Social Welfare, the Ministry of Education. They have to look into it that the act and the bill of the rights of the girls are put in place so that it can help also handling the cases of girls.
Adam says until officials enact punitive laws to curb sexual abuse against women and girls, young girls will continue to be exploited and abused in South Sudanese communities. Joyce Kiden is the chairperson of the Committee for Gender and Human Rights in the Yale River State Legislative Assembly. Kiden says efforts are underway to enact a child protection law.
With that act, it will give us power to help those cases of HGBB. Those cases will come to an end in our state. I'm concerned of girl-child rights. As we knew, during the conflict time, there were a lot of cases that were reported.
Aid agencies and local leaders say cases of sexual abuse against girls and women have been rampant in Yale River State ever since fighting spread to the area in July 2016. For VOA News, I'm Daniel Friday Martin in Yale Town.
The United Nations Refugee Agency, UNHCR, is carrying out a mass distribution of non-food items to thousands of flood-affected members of a refugee hosting community in Mabon to help them rebuild their lives. Devastating floods in the area left hundreds of thousands homeless. Dimo Silva Aurelio visited Mabon recently and files this story for VOA from Juba.
It is the first time since floods destroyed many South Sudanese homes about a month ago that villagers and refugees in Mabon are receiving blankets, plastic sheets, mosquito nets, and other supplies from the UN Refugee Agency. UNHCR calls it a multi-sectoral response to the thousands of flood victims in this part of the country. 25-year-old Toma Stephen, a mother of five, says this year's flood have made life extremely difficult. She says heavy flooding hit the area three times in the last few weeks. She says the first few times, villagers sought shelter on the road where the ground is higher. The third time, she says, people sought shelter under trees. Speaking in Arabic, Stephen says she is grateful to receive plastic sheeting and blankets to protect her children from rain and wind.
I have not had any shelter since the flood started. And now that I have gotten, and when I get like this, I will be able to make a tent to help me. The water has dried, but I have not yet returned to my house. I'm still staying on the road because it is still wet.
Rehab Bata, a mother of six, resides in Guling from Old Bunj Payam. Bata received two plastic sheets, two mats, two blankets, and mosquito nets. Speaking in Arabic, she says she lost everything she owned in the floods.
People who have many children were busy taking them to safer places. By the time they returned, they found nothing. The water took everything, including the bed and clothing.
Magog Dengali, UNHCR's associate field officer in Mabon, says his agency is first distributing aid to the most vulnerable people.
We have started the distribution to host community in Koral Ahmar Payam, that was last week, and we covered 2,000 households. And today we are distributing non-food items to 3,300 households.
Dengali says the distribution is timely and will help change the situation for most for the host communities in Mabon.
Our target is 50,000, which is approximately of 10,000 households. And this population is being served in five payams of Greater Mabon. As we know that Greater Mabon has two counties, and in these two counties we have five payams.
The flooding has displaced more than 150,000 refugees and 57,000 members of the host community, washing away farms, houses, and most of people's belongings. The UN World Food Programme has provided some emergency food and car support for many refugee families. Malar Maharaja Smith, head of UNHCR's field office in Mabon, says it is important that in such crisis, both the host community and refugees get the same assistance.
This is the kind of support that we have been providing. And also you can see that in terms of water and sanitation, the host community has also been very much affected. So we have had assessments being done at the field level to the areas of the host community to try to help them, you know, rebuild their latrines, rebuild their shelters.
Ismith says flood mitigation surveys and studies must be conducted so that aid workers can properly respond to natural disasters like this one in the future.
The scale of the floods this year took us a little bit off guard, and now we realize with climate change, the environment is changing as well, and that this could happen again maybe even next year.
Heavy rains due to climatic changes have caused devastating floods across East Africa, displacing thousands of people not only in South Sudan, but also in Kenya, Uganda, Ethiopia, Sudan, and the Democratic Republic of Congo. For VOA News, I am Dimo Silva Aurelio in Juba.
At least 132 people have died in Kenya following flash floods in many parts of the country. The Kenyan government says more than 300,000 people nationwide have been affected by floods as heavy rains continue to pound. From Nairobi, Maureen Ojiambo reports the government says it has put in place measures to ensure that the affected people will get relief.
Speaking in Nairobi, Kenya, during a press conference, government spokesperson Cyrus Oguna said that at least 132 people have died, 330,000 affected, 17,000 displaced, and 11,000 livestock swept away. Oguna says the roads that were cut off will be reconstructed to resume transport operations that has been paralyzed in most parts of the country.
Kenha is on the ground, working around the clock, open access so that activities and daily movement can be able to take place. Agriculture is equally affected, farmlands and crops have been destroyed, and livestock swept away, and many houses have been swept away or destroyed. Of course, you do recall the disaster in West Pokot, where several households lost their property, but not just in West Pokot alone, but other regions, albeit not so many counties that have experienced it.
The Kenyan government will continue monitoring the situation and undertake appropriate intervention mechanism. Devolution Cabinet Secretary Eugene Wamalwa said that the government has put measures in place to curb the situation.
We are putting the interventions in place to bring relief to the affected, whether by drought or flood, because the experts are telling us this is the terrible new normal. Long time ago, drought would come in a cycle of 10 years. The frequency increased to 5 years.
On the other hand, Treasury Cabinet Secretary Ukur Yatani has said that the relief food has been purchased by the government as other funds are set aside in aid of the affected persons.
Sometimes you send money, the beneficiary does not know how to read and write, cannot even realize that he has received this money, but then the phone he gets access. The siblings, maybe the, you know, the grandchildren, their own children, the other caretakers, get access to this. And we have seen cases where that fund can be diverted to go to other unintended beneficiaries.
According to the Meteorological Department of Kenya, the rains are predicted to continue till late December. Mr. Oguna says appropriate measures will be taken as he asks Kenyans who live in high-risk areas to relocate to safer areas.
So what lies ahead is that these rains are unlikely to subside before the end of December. And therefore, as government, we'll continue to monitor the situation and undertake appropriate intervention mechanisms. We're therefore issuing an advisory that those living in high-risk areas, and I'll mention them, such as Lake Victoria Basin, Lower Tana Delta, coastal and central regions, to move to safer areas. Already the government has designated camps in all counties that are affected where people can move to.
Already the Kenyan government has distributed food aid to 32 affected counties in the country as West Pokot leads in flood tragedy, having claimed at least 50 lives in the past 9 days. Reporting for VOA's Daybreak Africa, I am Maureen Ojiambo in Nairobi, Kenya.
Tune to South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. Sudanese celebrate the end of Omar al-Bashir's party in the streets. Find out exactly how when we come back.
do you think? People speak out on important questions. The question today:
if you could work in any profession, what would you choose?
I will choose to be a business lady, simply because it will make me to help the needy.
I'll choose the medical field because I feel it's an opportunity to help save lives.
I love marketing. I would want to master in the marketing field because I love to engage people. It will give me the opportunity to interact more.
I would choose law because there are a lot of crime committed in our country, and the people who commit the crime are just free. They are going without brought to book, or they are brought to justice.
Definitely something in policy, because I think that stuff like that is really important in helping people and communities move forward.
What do you think? A daily discussion of important questions from VOA.
South Sudan in Focus is now on WhatsApp. Send us a message on +1 202 630 8011. Tell us what's happening in your area or give us your feedback on the stories you hear on South Sudan in Focus. We look forward to hearing from you on WhatsApp. That number again, +1 202 630 8011.
You're listening to South Sudan in Focus. Some Sudanese youth are celebrating the dissolution of former President Omar al-Bashir's National Congress Party. Young people are painting and drawing graphics on public streets and cleaning up their neighborhoods in celebration of the new development. Michael Atit spoke to some of the youth in Khartoum's Eastern Sahafa neighborhood and has this story for VOA from Khartoum.
Hundreds of Sudanese youth chanted the names of NCP leaders, including former President Omar al-Bashir, Ali Usman Taha, and Ahmed Haroun, who they say disappointed the Sudanese people. The youth gathered at the Sahafa High Bridge to celebrate the dissolution of the National Congress Party. Some youth say they chose to express their joy by cleaning streets as a way to create awareness of the development in their neighborhoods. Muhammad Ahmed Abdul Samad, leader of Munjizun Youth Initiative, says young people took it upon themselves to repaint the entire high bridge, adding visual graphics that portray the theme of the revolution, freedom, peace and justice. Speaking in Arabic, Abdul Samad says these are the patriotic values that were missing from the Bashir's regime.
For the past 30 years, they didn't give anything to this country. What we saw and witnessed are only war, discrimination, and segregation among our people. We would like to see our transitional government focusing much on the issue of peace.
Last week, Sudan's Sovereign Council and Cabinet endorsed three bills, including one that dissolves the National Congress Party and bans it from carrying any political activities in the country. Nabila Salah Muhammad is one of the few female painters who are part of the Munjizun Youth Initiative. Munjizun is an Arabic word for accomplishers. Speaking in Arabic, Salah says some graphics are aimed at paying tribute to fallen heroes who sacrificed their lives to secure the revolution.
Most of the graphics that we do here are two types. One signifies our struggle during the revolution, or drawing our fallen heroes and heroines in addition to demands of the revolution. The second one is about educating our public through messages that allow them to keep our environment clean all the time.
Mohannad Mahmoud Habiballah is a graphics designer who works for a private company in Khartoum. Speaking in Arabic, Habiballah says he feels honored to serve his nation through the Munjizun initiative.
We feel proud that we are serving humanity by providing our community through a voluntary work. Most of us here as youth, we never met before. But through our interaction together in voluntary work, we are able to unite from different neighborhoods and know each other through this initiative.
Osman Hadadi, who owns a hardware store in Sahafa Market, says dissolving the NCP encouraged him to contribute to the celebration by providing paint from his store so that the youth could paint over images of Bashir's regime. Speaking in Arabic, he congratulated the transitional government for dissolving the NCP.
Some of our members were a bit hesitant that the transitional government is unable to take a strong decision on the party of the previous regime, but they surprised us with the recent law. This latest decision has given a push to our people, and it coincided with our voluntary work, and we are celebrating two events at Ego.
Youth in many other Sudanese towns such as Gadarif, Atbara, Sinar, Medeni, Al-Fashir, Al-Ubaid, and many others are doing the same thing on public streets, painting over faces from the previous regime with new pictures, including portrayals of ancient Sudanese kings and sultans that symbolize freedom, peace, and justice. For VOA News, I am Michael Atit in Khartoum.
Uganda's National Drug Authority, a government body that regulates medicines and pharmaceuticals, has recalled more than a million condoms from the market. David Nahamya, an official at the National Drug Authority, says the condoms did not meet international standards and could expose people to diseases. Magume Davis Rakaringe reports from Kampala.
David Nahamya, the secretary to the National Drug Authority, or NDA, confirms they found two unauthorized batches of condoms on the market during the routine surveillance. Nahamya says condoms of the Lifeguard brand failed tests at NDA's quality control laboratory.
We are always checking on the market what is prevailing. So we came across two batches which failed analysis, and we had to take a regulatory decision. This regulatory decision was to recall the products from the market because they are not fit for use. We have so far managed to recall more than 800,000 out of 1 million. That is representing 80%. And of course, these ones, they have to be destroyed.
The two batches of imported condoms were manufactured in May 2019 and were expected to expire in April 2024, while another, manufactured in April 2019, had the expiry date of March 2024. A batch is considered as not fulfilling standards if there are three or more condoms out of 315 sampled.
Of course, each condom has a label claim. Maybe this is the size, it's the length. Then, you know, the lubricant. What is the quantity of the lubricant? We also have to know the thickness. But then this one is in particular failed two parameters. One of them is freedom from holes, and then the busting strength.
Nahamya says his team is still deployed to ensure that all the remaining condoms are retrieved because they could expose people to sexual transmitted diseases or STDs. Dr. Nelson Musoba, who heads Uganda AIDS Commission, says it is important for anyone who could have used these condoms to test for STDs.
If you find that what you use falls within the batch, you know, of what NDA has announced, then to take precaution, you know, if you can trace the partner with whom you had sex, both of you should test and know your status. And if one of you is found to be HIV positive, speak to the health worker because there are mechanisms in place to know how to address, depending on the time period when you use these condoms.
Karusa Kiragu, the UNAIDS director in Uganda, applauded NDA for having swiftly acted.
For us, what it tells us is that the government has mechanisms to do this. The government is able to move quickly on it, and the government is able to act quickly. And that can only be seen as a good thing. And I think it instills confidence in Ugandans.
NDA officials say they will continue conducting routine post-market surveillance to protect the population from substandard, counterfeit, and unregistered unsafe condoms. For VOA News, I am Mugume Davis Rwakarinji in Kampala, Uganda.
And that's our show for this Wednesday. We leave you with the song Awilo Longomba Bundele. Bundele, 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 boom, boom, bundele, bundele, boom, 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 zumba, boom, zoom, boom, zumba, boom, zoom, boom, zumba, zumba, zumba.
Y tú
listening to Awilo Longomba with the song Bundele. I'm Ayan Dengbior in Washington. Thanks for listening, and I hope you can join us again tomorrow evening for another edition of South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America.